Thank you very much, and greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. This is C.P. McGregor speaking. Welcome to the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars, radio's greatest daytime dramatic program. Every day, a complete 30-minute drama from Hollywood. Every day, a famous Hollywood star. Today, our star is Lynn Merrick in Something Borrowed, Something Blue. Act one in just a moment, but first, a word from our announcer, Wendell Niles, for La Rosa.
Have you discovered that wonderful special La Rosa flavor? That luscious La Rosa flavor that comes exclusively from the cream of the great new Durum wheat crop? It's at your grocer's now. The most delicious macaroni, spaghetti, and egg noodles you ever tasted. Because La Rosa's got the cream of the crop. You see, La Rosa is the world's largest user of fine Durum wheat semolina. So it's natural that leading Durum millers offer La Rosa first choice of super select number one cream of the crop semolina. Prove it yourself. Tonight, make the La Rosa three-way quality test. See, taste, compare. See La Rosa's natural golden color. The natural sunshine of the world's finest semolina. Taste La Rosa's luscious flavor. Richer, smoother, more delicious, with that just right firm yet tender texture. Compare La Rosa with any other macaroni, spaghetti, or egg noodles you ever tasted. Once you try La Rosa, you'll never serve anything but La Rosa. Now, once again, our host, C.P. McGregor.
And now the curtain rises on Act One of Something Borrowed, Something Blue, starring Lynn Merrick. A distinguished-looking man is Ellsworth Meigs, with his waxed mustache and carefully brushed Van Dyke beard. A hint of a superior smile flickers on his mouth as he presses a plump finger on the doorbell in front of a small house. In a moment, the door opens. A woman with sharp features glares at him with suspicion and hostility. She is Mrs. Bennett.
Yes?
Does Ann Bennett live here?
Whatever it is you're selling, we can't afford it.
Oh, but I didn't come to sell anything. I came to buy.
To buy what? You've got the wrong case.
If Ann Bennett lives here...
We've got nothing to sell.
Please, madam, if Ann Bennett lives here, may I see her? May I come in? I'll try to be as brief as possible.
All right, but try to be even briefer than that. Ann?
Yes?
Ann, come here. There's somebody here to see you.
You want to see me?
Oh, I would have known you anywhere. Though I must confess, Ann, I thought it would be extraordinary if you were really as lovely as his description of you.
Whose description? Who are you?
Well, I'm Colonel Abernathy Norris. I came from New York to see you. I promised Tom Avery that I would.
Tom? You knew Tom?
Yes, overseas. We got to be good friends.
Were you in the army?
Yes, I was in charge of a group of experts in camouflage work. Our job was to make airfields and factories look from above like part of the landscape. You see, even art played an important role in the war.
Colonel Norris, I don't think Tom ever mentioned you.
Perhaps not. My work involved some secrecy. We got to know each other pretty well, though, and... Of course, he told me a little about himself, his work, his ambition, and, of course, about you.
He never amounted to anything, and he never would.
Aunt Harriet.
He showed me some of his work. I think he had ability. Of course, he needed a great deal of development. There were many things about him I never got a chance to find out before he was killed. Did he always live here?
Only the year before he went into the army.
He was a tramp. He bummed around the country.
You can call it anything you like, but he knew the people he painted and the places they lived, and he painted them with truth and understanding.
Did he ever show his work to anyone, art dealers?
Only once. It wasn't very encouraging.
You would have starved with him. You could have married Will Davis, who's got a fine position in the bank.
You're not being exactly fair.
Now, you mind your own business. Nobody asked any friend of Tom Avery's to come here.
Aunt Harriet, please.
As a matter of fact, if I could find some of his work, I'd like to show it in New York as a way of paying some small tribute to him. I would even take on the expense myself.
You mean you'd pay good money for it?
Oh, it wouldn't be much, of course. It'd depend on how many paintings he left.
There are 14 of them.
Do you know where they are?
I have them.
All of them?
Well, yes. He left them with me before he went overseas. A few later ones he sent from London.
Oh, how fortunate that I happened to come. I would be willing to pay you $500 for them. They will never, of course, sell for that much, but I would like to do something for Tom.
Did you save $500 for that junk she's been keeping upstairs?
That may not seem much, but...
Won't you sit down, Colonel Norris?
Oh, thanks for your kindness. Thanks very much. But they're not for sale.
Why not?
Suppose we say $700, then.
It's not the money, it's...
What is it, then?
Well, they don't really belong to me.
Legally, they do.
And anyway, I want to keep them. There's nothing else left. And I feel that an important part of his life is in them. Still alive and real and exciting.
Sometimes I think the girl's demented.
Suppose we say $1,000. I brought a contract along, just a mere formality.
$1,000?
No.
Well, I can't believe you're as selfish as that. When we need the money.
I'm sorry, but I'm not selling them. To anyone. For any price.
Anne, come back here. Come back, I say.
I suppose there's nothing much I can do except give her time to think it over.
Are you staying in town?
Yes, at the Phoenix Hotel, just for the night.
Mm-hmm. Leave that contract here. I'll get those paintings for you. I promise you.
Come in, Mrs. Bennett. Any luck?
None. If I had more time, if you could stay another day.
I doubt if it'll help, Mrs. Bennett. There's one thing you can't talk out of existence. Nobody can.
What's that?
Love. Her love for Tom Avery. Her faith in him. It's the one thing I was afraid of running into.
What do you mean?
You look like an intelligent woman, Mrs. Bennett. A shrewd and intelligent woman. A woman who wouldn't let a great deal of money slip through her fingers.
Well, I wouldn't exactly call $1,000 a great deal of money.
And neither would I. But the work left by Thomas Avery is worth, I should say, conservatively... some $30,000 or $40,000.
You must be out of your head.
Maybe even more.
And you offered us $500, Colonel Norris, if that's really your name.
To be perfectly honest, it's not. My name is Ellsworth Meggs. You see, I'm an art dealer, a man of exceptional taste and critical insight.
Yes, go on.
Well, during the war, a young American pilot came to my old friend Abner Pickering's place in London. He needed money. He was trying to sell one of his paintings. Abner bought it out of sentimentality just to help out a young American flyer. He promptly buried it on a shelf. Now, a month ago, Abner arrived in New York on business. Among the paintings he brought, I saw this extraordinary work by Thomas Avery. I took the painting to John Hildebrand of the News and a few others. Their opinion was unanimous.
But how did you know about Anne and where she lived?
Through hard work. For 3 weeks, I followed every lead. I sent cables and telegrams. I checked and traced and telephoned. And when I learned that Thomas Avery was dead, killed over Germany, I told myself that somewhere... there must be other work by him. Somewhere, somebody has a fortune and doesn't know it.
So you came here to cheat us?
Oh, now, don't be so hasty in your judgment, Mrs. Bennett. I have a proposal to make.
What proposal?
If you can get those paintings, I'll give you half of anything I sell them for.
Half? Do you call that reasonable?
Yes, only a man like me could dispose of them. You can always tell your niece that you didn't really think they were worth anything, and you were really doing it for her.
Well?
Where are they now?
Upstairs in the attic. In a locked trunk.
Ah, can you get the key?
Well, I think so.
Can you get your niece out of the house tonight?
I think so.
Ah, good. I'll come tonight. You know, this should prove a very profitable partnership, Mrs. Bennett.
You can leave the dishes, Anne, darling. I'll do them. Will Davis should be coming any minute now.
I'm sorry, Aunt Harriet, but I won't see him.
Oh, the trouble with you is you can't get that worthless Tom Avery out of your mind. Now, where are you going?
Upstairs to bed. I have a headache. When Will comes, please tell him I'm sorry.
There's Will now. You've got to see him tonight.
Why? Why is it so important to you?
Do you think I want to be humiliated? He'll know I'm lying. You know how impossible it is for me to lie.
Then tell him the truth.
Anne, darling, please see him tonight. Oh, just tonight. If only to tell him yourself how you feel about him.
Oh, all right. I'll talk to him outside in his car.
No. No, you can't.
Are you feeling all right?
I mean, it's unfair to him. I mean, well, something tells me, Anne, he's going to ask you to marry him tonight. Oh, give poor Will a decent chance. And I give you my word, if you still feel this way about him after tonight, I'll never breathe his name to you again.
Well, all right. That's a fair bargain.
Come in. Be quick about it.
Are you alone?
Of course, but hurry. I don't know when my niece will come back. Now, are you sure nobody saw you come here?
My dear Mrs. Bennett, caution is practically a way of life with me.
Well, it wasn't easy getting this key, you know.
My admiration for you, Mrs. Bennett, grows by leaps and bounds.
There's the trunk in the corner there.
Anything wrong?
Well, the key turns all right, but something stuck.
Probably a rusty lock. Here, let me try it.
Ow! Well, what happened?
Oh, my hand. I cut it on that rusty lock. Look, it's bleeding.
Well, stop groaning. You won't die. There's some iodine in the kitchen downstairs. You got the lock open anyway. Oh, are you going to stand there admiring them, you fool? You've got to get out of here before she comes back.
Ann?
Who is it? Tom! Tom!
Oh, darling.
Oh, I'm dreaming, I know, but I don't really care.
Oh, you're trembling. I wanted to surprise you, but maybe I overdid it.
Hold me close.
Oh, Ann, for 10,000 miles, I kept thinking how it would be seeing you again. But it was like trying to imagine what the beginning of the world was like, before war or death or unhappiness were known.
They said you were...
I know.
What happened? Why wasn't there any word from you all this time?
Well, for a while in the hospital, there was serious doubt.
About?
About using my hands again. It seemed like the end of everything, hope and dreams and...
And me. Oh, Tom. Oh, darling, do you think I'd love you less if you couldn't paint the side of a barn?
But I can now, Ann, so I'll never know exactly what you love me for.
Darling, this is an awful blow to my pride, but will you marry me tonight?
Well, considering the way I feel about you, I'm afraid I'll have to.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Oh, darling.
Oh, by the way, your friend, Colonel Norris, came...
My friend who?
Why, Colonel Norris.
Oh, darling, my friend stopped at the rank of lieutenant. Maybe a captain here and there, but... Well, what did he look like?
Oh, he was big and fat with a trim little pointed beard and black eyes.
What exactly did he want?
He wanted to... Tom, he wanted to buy your paintings. All of them.
And what did you tell him?
I refused, of course. He offered $1,000 for them.
$1,000?
My aunt was furious when I turned it down.
Oh, I can imagine.
Come with me. Hurry.
Oh, where are you going?
It just struck me that maybe it's just a wild thought, but to make sure...
Oh, will you stop a minute and make sense? What are you going up to the attic for?
I locked them carefully in a trunk so my aunt wouldn't find them. Tom!
What's wrong?
The key to the trunk was taken off my key ring.
Well, where did you keep it?
In my purse. There's the trunk over in that corner.
Is it locked?
No. Ah! Tom!
It's your aunt. Strangled.
The curtain falls on Act One of Something Borrowed, Something Blues, starring Lynn Merrick. Our star and our distinguished cast of La Rosa radio players return shortly for Act Two.
CPR Play's title reminds me of a letter here from a La Rosa listener.
Let's hear it, Wendell. We all love to hear from our wonderful La Rosa audience.
Here goes, then. This lady writes, "My family used to like chopped meat, but lately they've grown tired of it. When I told this to a neighbor, she suggested I make meatballs and spaghetti for a change. So I borrowed a package of La Rosa spaghetti from her, got a can of tomato sauce from the cupboard, and presto, in 20 minutes I had a banquet fit for a king. Your La Rosa spaghetti is by far the best spaghetti we ever tasted. Now I know what you mean when you say there is no other spaghetti like La Rosa. Well, thanks for that grand letter. And there's a tip, ladies. How about serving meatballs and spaghetti a la Rosa tonight? For the detailed recipe and 100 other wonderful La Rosa treats, consult your La Rosa cookbook. Or if you've not gotten yours yet, send for your big 64-page recipe book today. It's free. Write La Rosa, that's L-A, capital R-O-S-A, care of this station. Now prove La Rosa's superiority yourself. See, taste, compare. See La Rosa's natural golden color. The pure sunshine tone of the world's finest semolina. Taste that luscious La Rosa flavor. Richer, smoother, more delicious. Made in the unhurried old world way for that just right, firm yet tender texture.
Compare La Rosa with any other macaroni, spaghetti, or egg noodles you ever tasted. Once you try La Rosa, you'll never serve anything but La Rosa. Extra nutritional value, because all La Rosa products are enriched with extra vitamins and minerals. Help safeguard your health. You'll like La Rosa. It's America's largest selling brand. Now here's C.P. McGregor.
The curtain rises on Act Two of Something Borrowed, Something Blue, starring Lynn Merrick. It was a distinguished-looking man who came to see Anne, a man who said his name was Colonel Norris. He was interested in the paintings of Tom Avery, who was reported killed in action. But that night, Tom Avery returned, and he and Anne decided to get married. Their plans were suddenly interrupted when they found Mrs. Bennett murdered. They are now in the kitchen, where the sheriff's interest is centered on an overturned table.
Seems she was killed down here in the kitchen.
Well, from the way that table was knocked over, she must have put up a struggle.
Hey, what's that on the floor?
Starch. She was fixing it for some washing.
Well, she must have come in the kitchen with whoever it was killed her. So it couldn't have been anyone she was afraid of.
If you'll find that man who called himself Colonel Norris, Sheriff...
Yes, we'll find him. With that description, he won't be a hard man to find. When did you get back, Tom?
This afternoon.
Well, where are you staying?
With Milo Andrews.
That'll be a better welcome for you than this. It's my job to ask unpleasant questions. Did Mrs. Bennett still object to your marrying Anne?
Well, I didn't get a chance to find out, Sheriff, and it wouldn't have made any difference. We were going to get married tonight.
You came here tonight, Tom, but you just waited outside the house?
That's right. Milo told me that he saw Anne with Will Davis. I came here about 9 o'clock and waited for her.
Did Will take you home, Anne?
No. We had a quarrel, and I walked home.
What time's you leaving?
About 8:30.
You say you didn't get back here until 9:30. What happened in that hour?
I was walking.
Just walking?
Just walking. I was trying to make up my mind about the money Colonel Norris offered. My aunt had been nagging me and quarreling about it. I wondered if maybe I was being selfish about it and even unfair to Tom.
Oh, so there was a quarrel with your aunt, too, over the money. Well, I guess you wouldn't have been very happy staying on in this town, especially after marrying Tom.
What do you mean?
Well, the money would have come in mighty handy now. Would have made it possible for you and Tom to go away together.
I didn't accept that money. I was only thinking about it. Why don't you find that man, Norris, before he gets away?
Oh, we'll find him. You'll get word in New York. May take time, but we'll get him back here for questioning, if that'll help.
You don't seem to be in any hurry.
This scarf your aunt was strangled with, Anne. Was it hers?
No, it's mine. It was in the hall.
And you had the only key to that trunk?
Yes. But it was taken from my purse.
I believe that. I've known Harriet Bennett for 30 years, and she wouldn't let a little key stand in the way of $10,000.
Ten? The offer was $1,000, not ten.
Well, if this receipt was in her pocket, she got $10,000. Seems this man Norris got what he wanted, paid well for it, and left. I can imagine what a happy woman your aunt was with all that money. Suddenly, who should turn up but Tom Avery himself?
What are you getting at?
Naturally, the money belonged to you, but I figure she wasn't too willing to give it up. And with you and Anne wanting to go away, that money was mighty important.
Are you trying to say that I'm...
I was just wondering, Tom.
About what?
Those blue marks on your hand. What are they from?
Well, I've got an untidy habit of putting paint tubes in my pocket without thinking when I'm working. It gets off on my hand sometimes, and I
see. You were just as careless about killing her, Tom.
What are you talking about?
See for yourself. That paint on your hand came off on the scarf. You left blue marks on it.
I didn't touch that scarf.
I'm sorry, Tom, but it's my duty. You're under arrest for murder.
The 100th time, Sheriff. Those blue marks didn't come from my hand. They don't even look like paint to me.
Well, never can be too sure. I'll get a laboratory test made in Albany first thing in the morning.
And in the meantime, whoever it was killed will get away. Now look, Sheriff, give me until tomorrow. After that, if you still want me, I'll give myself up.
I wish I could do it, Tom. Always did like you, but I can't.
I see.
A lot of people around here just wouldn't understand.
Oh, sure. But suppose you had a gun pointing at you.
Say, where'd you get... That gun looks familiar.
It should. It's yours. Get out of this car, Sheriff. Did you get any information, Ann?
No. I talked to Ed at the station. He swears that if anyone with a beard and a walking stick got on the 917, he would have seen him.
Well, what does that prove?
The next stop is White Plains, about 9 miles away. Suppose this man, Norris, didn't want to risk being picked up at the station. He might have gone to White Plains by bus, planning to get a train there.
What time could he get the next train?
We're on the next train, the 11:40. If I'm right, he's waiting at White Plains now, waiting to get on this train.
Suppose he does get on. We've got no evidence, nothing.
He left those blue marks on the scarf. If we can show that he did, we'll wire ahead to the New York police and have them board the train.
Anne, do you really think he killed your aunt?
Who else could it be? Look, look, Tom. We're coming into White Plains now.
The station's deserted.
Nobody's getting on. Seems I had a wrong hunch.
Look, look, Anne, at the far end of the platform, running. A man with a cane and a beard.
Good. Now, darling, listen.
Yes?
This is what I want you to do. Hello, Colonel Norris.
What are you doing on this train?
I saw you get on at White Plains.
Oh. Oh, yes, sir. Come in. Are you going to New York for a visit?
Not exactly.
How's your charming aunt?
She was found murdered tonight.
Your aunt?
You saw her tonight, didn't you?
No, no. Not since last night when she came to the hotel.
There were marks left on the scarf she was strangled with.
Marks?
Blue marks.
Would anyone be as careless as that?
Somebody was.
Certainly have no reason to suspect me. There's nothing blue on my hand. You can see for yourself.
Nothing blue.
You seem disappointed. Did you really think I killed her? Why should I? I bought those paintings and paid for them. She brought them to the hotel.
They didn't belong to her, you know.
I doubt if you could make much of a case in court. They were left in her attic, in her house. And they were never left to you by Thomas Avery legally. I'm afraid you have absolutely no evidence against me.
I'm afraid not.
You came to look for telltale evidence on my hand, didn't you? If I killed her, would I be likely to leave blue marks on that scarf? That's really absurd.
Yes, I suppose so.
However, if there's anything I can do to help you...
No, thank you.
Are you going? Be discouraged. Suppose we have a drink and talk this over. You'll probably need some money now.
I'll manage.
You can still have the $500 I offered originally, if you'll waive all claim to those paintings.
Where are they?
In a safe place.
In that suitcase?
No, I wouldn't crowd my starched collar. You know, those are almost as important to me as a valuable painting.
Starched?
We all have our odd little vanities, you know.
Of course. Even a ruthless murderer.
Come on now. You still suspect me? You've admitted you have no evidence at all.
I told you there were marks. You left blue marks on that scarf.
But there's nothing blue on my hand. I've already been satisfied about that.
There's iodine on your hand.
What are you talking about? Iodine isn't blue?
Of course not. That's why you didn't know you left those marks. My aunt was fixing some starch for the washing when you came. In the struggle, you got it on your hand, and you wiped it off on that scarf.
What would that do?
Too bad you never washed your own collars, Colonel. You might have learned something about starch. You might have known that iodine will turn starch blue. It's the common test for starch.
Keep away from that door. I dislike using a gun, but I'm afraid I'll have to make an exception. When we come to the next tunnel and the train whistle blows, I... My thanks for your timely warning, and by the time we reach New York, the iodine on my hand will be gone.
Will you tell me just one thing? Are those paintings worth so much? Enough to kill?
They are. You know, I'm almost sorry that death will keep you, like Thomas Avery himself, from seeing his success. Yes, his death overseas cut short a great career. It may comfort you to know that in killing you, I'm really paying a grim tribute to your faith, to the value of his work, his extraordinary accomplishments. I hope that somewhere he knows.
Tom! Tom, are you all right?
Oh, sure. That shot punctured the roof. Oh, it took me some time to locate the emergency cord, but I made it.
The train stopping suddenly was what threw him off balance. Did you wire for the New York police like I told you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Anne, you certainly had this well planned.
Oh, thanks, darling. But from now on, we'll make our plans together.
And so the curtain falls on Act Two of Something Borrowed, Something Blue, starring Lynn Merrick. I'll be back in a moment, but first, here is your announcer, Wendell Niles, for La Rosa.
See, taste, compare. Prove to yourself the superiority of La Rosa macaroni spaghetti egg noodles. Tonight, make the three-way La Rosa quality test. See La Rosa's natural golden color, the pure sunshine color of the world's finest semolina, the cream of the new durum wheat harvest. Taste that luscious La Rosa flavor. Richer, smoother, more delicious, with that just right, firm yet tender texture. Compare La Rosa with any other macaroni, spaghetti, or egg noodles you ever tasted. Once you try La Rosa, you'll never serve anything but La Rosa. Look for the big red rose on every package. Get La Rosa, America's largest selling brand. For real economy, remember, it's a full pound. Now, once again, our host, C.P. McGregor.
Thank you very much, Lynn. The length of our play has taken up all of our usual interview time. I just want to take these few moments now to remind you, Lynn and ladies and gentlemen, to listen tomorrow when Robert Mitchum joins us in a comedy, The Good Old Days. Until tomorrow, then, thanks for listening, and cheerio from Hollywood.